Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Jeff Edwards and Jerry Urshebeck for the KERM Lawn and Garden Program. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Jeff. 2024, another season.
Hey, and our guest today is Steve Ackright.
And good morning to everybody. It's spring.
Every other day.
Yeah. Spring today, what's coming tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, it's good to be back. It's good to be back on the radio and see you guys. And let's talk about lawn and garden stuff. The wives' tale about rain on Easter means rain every weekend for the next six weekends after Easter? Are you guys familiar with that one?
I haven't heard that one.
Really?
I haven't heard that one before.
Let's say it's true, because, you know, it's coming this weekend.
Yeah.
Easter was last weekend, right?
Yeah. Although I was out to dinner, and Gary Lamb and his wife were just next to us, and so I just struck up a conversation asking if they had any forecasts for the weather. And I said, you know, in like a lion, out like a lamb, and Mrs. Lamb goes, "We always go out like a lamb."
It was in like a lamb and out like a lamb, yeah. Wasn't it?
That's probably not the first time that subject's been brought up.
Hey, I want to ask you, Jerry, is the forsythia blooming yet?
Not yet, but it's... I think it's shortly to be arriving.
Placed
and arriving.
You know, I just can't help myself. That's always like the first thing I have to harass you
about. It is good humor, I'm telling you. Because I watch that thing and I go, well, pre-emergent time, right? When the forsythia...
Forsythia.
Okay, just like the Star Wars, Sith.
Yes.
Yeah.
Forsythia is blooming, and so... I found out that was a fake plant. I said, "Hey, what happened to your plant?" "Oh, I put it away." "What do you mean you put it away?" "Well, it's plastic, Jerry, and you have to put it away."
Jerry's been living his life according to a plastic plant.
Yeah.
For many years.
Okay. Is that a wife's tale or what?
It was a wife and it was a tale.
So, Steve, you said you had a couple of things that you wanted to...
Since we're looking at spring and it's going to be spring cleanup time and people are going to be cleaning yards, trimming trees, all that. I did call the city, talked to the baler unit, which is on the bypass road there. If you turn it.
Yes.
And go east on that road, they are open 7 to 4 Monday through Friday.
Okay.
There's no charge. They will have 2 cleanup days coming in May on Saturdays, which is going to be nice because those people that work during the week will be able to get their stuff cleaned up.
Yeah.
Now, that's only for city. It's free. But anybody that wants to can come in.
You know, I asked him about a fee. I asked him about that, and he said, you know, we really don't check. I was like, check me.
So hours again?
7 to 4 Monday through Friday.
7 to 4 Monday through Friday.
And then it's going to be May 4th and May 11th, which are Saturdays.
Okay.
They will be open 7 to 4.
I think we have noticed that we have to take a break, so we'll be back right after this.
With spring comes outdoor grilling, and Century Lumber in Torrington has you covered. They have huge savings on Charbroil grills priced at under $400. There's also closeout pricing on Green Mountain grills and Blackstone griddles. And while you're in, see the new grill from Green Mountain with Wi-Fi capabilities, taking grilling to a whole new level. It's on the showroom floor now at Century Lumber in Torrington.
Ready to make your house the envy of the neighborhood? Then your first stop should be Great Gardens in Torrington, the region's largest and most gorgeous independent garden center. Stocked full of annuals, hanging baskets, veggies, perennials, trees, and shrubs, they have all of your gardening needs covered. They even have a large selection of decor to bring that wow factor to your yard and garden. Open year-round and ready for you now. Stop into Great Gardens, 1 mile west of Main Street in Torrington.
Concrete is hard. That's why you should hire J-Built Homes for your next concrete project. Jeff and the crew have experience in all different kinds of concrete designs with professional results. Take one look at J-Built Homes' website, jbuiltwyo.com, and the finished jobs speak for themselves. From driveways to patios, homes, or commercial projects, there's not a job too big or too small. Call Jeff today for a free estimate at 307-631-4449.
Landscaping Plus on East Highway 26 in Torrington is ready to help you create the outdoor space of your dreams. With an experienced crew and an eye for attractive landscaping design, you can trust Landscaping Plus with any project you might have for your yard. They also carry sprinkler parts and other lawn and garden items that you may need for those do-it-yourself projects. Give Rob a call today, and he can help you find the perfect design for your home. Landscaping Plus in Torrington, 532-6067.
When you're in the pest control business, you get called a lot of things. Bug guy, exterminator, terminator, even rat catcher. Here at Menzel Pest Control, our customers agree on one word for us, professional. For 46 years, we have provided the most educated, low-impact, and effective remedies for unwanted bugs and rodents. Spring is the time to stop little pests like ants, mice, and spiders before they cause big problems. Visit us at BenzelPestControl.com and schedule a visit today.
Peaceful Prairie Nursery encourages you to reserve your spot for their paint party on Saturday, April 13th from 2 to 5. Call and reserve at 308-631-7452. Peaceful Prairie would also like to remind you that potatoes, onion sets, asparagus, and even horseradish are now available. Open Tuesday through Saturday from 9 to 5. Plus, there's still time to reserve for the container party. That takes place today from 2 to 5 and tomorrow from 10 to 2. We'll see you at Peaceful Prairie Nursery in Mitchell, Nebraska.
So apologies to our listeners. And our abrupt change, we forgot our format. You know, it's been, how many months since we've been
here? And our sponsors,
yeah.
So tip our hat to the sponsors.
We're just so anxious to jump right in there.
We did. We jumped, and John was going, aren't you guys going to take a break from sponsors?
yeah, sure.
Instead of trying to get your attention, he needs to tap me on the shoulder and let me know what's going on.
Get him on the head.
So dates again, Arbor Day. Let's talk.
It's kind of an interesting one. Arbor Day is actually April 26th. That's the National Arbor Day. Wyoming, for some reason, decided to change it. So our Arbor Day in Wyoming is the last Monday of April.
What happens on Arbor Day?
Well, that's just the recognition of planting trees, planting things. I drive around town and look at trees that were planted on Arbor Day when I was working on the tree board, and it's really kind of neat, you know.
Yeah.
20, 25 years down the line, you get to see this great big tree that you put in as a little sucker.
The day to go plant stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
So around here, the banks used to offer
trees,
little bare root stock trees.
Mm-hmm.
And we had two of the ASH trees, ash trees, and they are really doing quite well.
Excellent. How big around are they?
Probably about 8 inches at the bottom.
Okay.
They're getting to be a nice
tree. How long
have
they been planted?
20 years.
Okay. So we had we had three ash trees in our landscape that were doing great, and then we had borers get into them and had to take them out.
That's the one downfall of ash trees around here.
Right. And Amy Seiler said we should plant another tree to take their place underneath their canopy. And there are some trees that are able to do that and still survive quite nicely.
So I didn't get them planted while the trees were still alive, but I have Colorado blue spruce planted where they used to be.
In their stead.
Okay, yeah.
Hey, one tree that you had that was blown over and you pulled it straight, did it live?
Okay, so I took the tie off of it this year. I think this would have been the third year that I had it tied up. It's still alive. So that was one of those blooming hawthorns that you can...
Did it berry?
So it here's
did it
the
have
thing.
Berries?
No, but it just had flowers on it in the spring, pink flowers.
Okay.
And it was a grafted tree. The graft froze off. So now I have the original hawthorn rootstock which it is a spiny sucker, and it really wants to branch and grows kind of funky. I can't say that it's totally straight, but eventually, 50 years from now, it might straighten up.
Looky there.
But it'll still have the thorns on it.
And it'll still be the thorny version.
Yeah. Now, I have one that's not thorny, and it blooms, and it produces a nice little red berry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the mountain ash thing?
No, it's not. The mountain ash has an orange flower.
Yeah. And an orange berry.
And an orange berry. This has it is red.
Okay.
It's almost one of those kind of things you want to put a needle through it and thread it for the Christmas tree.
Do the birds eat it?
Birds eat on them as well.
So are they hard apple-like type things?
I don't know what you call a hard apple.
They're not like a soft,
like a small crab apple.
Yeah. Oh no, they're smaller than that. They're about the size of an eraser, a little bigger than an eraser.
But are they hard like an apple, or are
they hard
like
an apple?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably one of those that it kind of hangs on in the fall, and then through the winter, fall and winter months, the birds will eat them.
Yeah, that's correct. That's exactly correct.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
No, that's it. That's the way it is.
Couple of things I sent to Jerry this week to talk about the poplar vagabond aphid. Are you familiar with that?
I know aphids.
So this time of year, when you're looking up at cottonwood trees and you see those little black things that look like brains.
Oh, those little caterpillar looking. Oh, no. Okay, those.
The galls that are up at the terminals. So this is caused by the poplar vagabond aphid. So the aphid, they don't know what the intermittent host is between, but every spring they will lay eggs at the terminals of cottonwood trees, particularly cottonless cottonwood trees. And then the aphids, when they feed, it forces this gall to be created at the terminal ends.
Oh, okay.
It's mostly cosmetic. It prevents the tree from actually sending out new shoots. And the weird thing is they always go back to the same tree. So it'll be a perpetual problem in the same trees.
Now, is it one of those that you do go in and try to treat it, or just...
It's mostly cosmetic. It doesn't really cause problems.
Oh, okay. That one I haven't heard of. I've heard of a lot of the different aphids.
I got plenty at my house if you want to come see what they look like.
Come look.
I'll take a Sunday afternoon drive.
I should have brought one in, but I asked Jerry if I should bring one in. He goes, no. So, you know, you can't see what it is today.
Oh, well, that's, you know, there's so many of those different things that are a cosmetic. It's like getting the leaf gall on some of your trees.
Right.
And they really don't hurt the tree. They just don't look good.
Hackberries.
Hackberries are the worst ones for the leaf gall.
Yeah. Hackberries are worse for other things, too. But they are a very prolific weed, I think. If you have hackberries someplace close by, you get a lot of hackberry trees growing up in your...
other properties.
In your property, because the birds like them and they distribute them very efficiently.
Well, I know when I first moved back to Torrington 27 years ago, everybody was like, oh, if you want a good, hardy tree, plant the hackberry.
Well, they are very cool trees. They have an interesting bark. They look nice in the wintertime and provide a lot of shade. But if you don't want to be looking at galls on the leaves, that's the hackberry nipple gall is what that one is.
Wouldn't you agree that every tree has its pros and cons?
Of course they do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have a tree that produces a big old jack bean and the honey locust. And it is hard to clean up.
You're feeding the squirrels.
Well, some. But we're getting our exercise by cleaning up some of those leaves.
Well, yeah.
Or some of those pods.
With that, that's something kind of interesting. You cannot buy those trees with the pods anymore at a nursery. Because all they sell is, would it be the...
It's the hybrid.
The hybrid male.
Sterile.
Because, there's male and female, and one of them has the seeds, one of them doesn't.
What's the word for that? Is that dioecious? Monoecious? Can't remember.
Monodioecious?
Yeah, something like that, where the male and female is on two different trees.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought it was on the same tree.
Potentially.
Potentially.
It just depends.
Yeah, and some, you know, couple of years... we'd look at each other, Myrna and I, would go, what's wrong with our tree? It doesn't have any pods. It's starting to die. And then the next year, it came out with like three times the pods.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it just in that cycle, it got either frozen or didn't quite perform well. But then the next year, it came on like gangbusters.
It came back and got you. Hunted you, huh? Yeah.
So if anybody's interested and they would like some of those honey locusts with pods, because they are very hardy and very spiny, I have a lot of natives out on my property that I also deal with, but they are not.
Yeah,
they are not a friendly landscape tree.
I don't have the spinies. I've seen yours, and those are
vicious.
Vicious.
Yeah, I never cared for the honey locust just because they came out. They were one of the last trees that came out in the spring, and then they were one of the first ones in the late summer, early fall. That would start going dormant.
Mm-hmm.
I'd constantly get people coming in saying my hawthorns or my honey locust is dying because all the leaves are turning yellow.
Yeah, no, that's
what
it is.
That's what happened. That's what happened.
Yeah, it's already time for it. It's going to sleep for the winter.
Well,
yeah.
One of the nice things about these, though, is that when they are blooming in the spring, the blossoms are green. You can't really see them, but the bees love them.
Yeah, so, and then the blossoms fall. Mm-hmm. And produce a nice little green carpet for a little while.
Right.
And then they have this nice oriental leaf, and it's just nice filtered sun then that comes through. But then they produce the pods.
And you get to deal with
those. And then the little leaves go through my gutter guards. And so I have to take my gutter guards off to get those leaves. But for a lot of them, the gutter guards will do a good job.
Mm, okay.
But for some of those, slip right through.
One of the next things I'd like to talk about are oak galls. So right now, if you're looking at your trees, if you're out pruning things, there's a little wasp that causes a marble-sized gall on your oak trees.
Yep. Yeah.
And again, cosmetic. Now, last year on our trees, it was a really heavy infestation. So all along the new growth, on all of my oaks, I had a lot of these galls. But I'm hoping this year, one of the things that happens is when you have a high population of those, then you also bring in other parasites that parasitize those things. And there were a lot of beneficials hanging out on the trees. And so
Even worms got to eat.
Again, it's cosmetic. Yeah. Mostly, but
yeah, that's that little wasp goes in and actually stings the leaf or stings it,
stings and, the new growth,
and infects it, puts
an egg in it,
puts an egg in it. Yeah.
Yep. And then the larva of the wasp feeding on the tree causes that gall.
Right. Yep. Yep. And I've seen that. Everybody, I've actually cut one of those open to see if there was something in it. And most of the time, you won't find anything.
This time of year, you won't find anything. But in the fall, there'll be a little tiny larva inside.
Okay.
Yep.
And then they cause the ugly bumps that nobody likes and thinks their tree is sick and dying.
Yes.
But they're not.
They're not.
Well, I've got a shout out to my friend Mark. His two stepsons are wanting to plant lawn. I told him a little early.
Yes.
But he could get his dirt work and his groundwork done. Would you fertilize the ground first?
You couldn't. They do make fertilizer for new lawns. I'd be real careful about it, because if you put too much on and then you put your seed down, when that seed germinates and hits that fertilizer,
burner,
it will burn burn your grass. Yeah.
So if you're 2 weeks out, I mean, because grass seed is about like corn, it's about 50 degrees soil temp, right?
55 to 60, yeah. Yep.
Even higher. So we have a time for you to put a little of that fertilizer on and have it dissipate down into the ground a little bit. Get your ground all shaved off and raked off so that when you're ready, you're ready to go.
Yeah, you could. You could now.
You
and
could.
And of course, that was... I've always gone with the rule... I even wrote it down in my notes. You know, on lawn fertilizers and stuff, I go with the min-max rule. You put on the minimum amount to get the maximum performance.
Benefit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a lot of people will plant something else with their grass. Now, I've heard rye, triticaline, oats.
Annual ryegrass.
Wheat.
I've seen that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people complain about the clover in their yards. Well, that used to be one that they would actually mix clover seed in with the grass seed in these old bluegrass lawns. And the reason that was because the clover was a natural nitrogen setter in the soil. So it would help the bluegrass grow. So that's why a lot of the older lawns that you see around the area have clover in them.
Now we spray that out.
Now everybody wants to spray it out.
And don't confuse clover with Black Medic.
Yes. Right.
Although they are related, Black Medic is just a nasty clover. Has a little yellow flower on it, prolific cedar, and very difficult to get rid of.
Right, because they've got a really, really deep taproot on it.
Yep.
Well, yeah. Clover does too, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And alfalfa has a really
and they're all kind
deep
of,
taproot.
Same family.
Kind of in the same family.
Legumes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of times with the alfalfa, they'll plant alfalfa, grow it for so many seasons, and then they will rotate into corn because corn is a real high nitrogen feeder.
Mm-hmm.
So their corn crop then will do
the alfalfa has fixed nitrogen over many years, and then it's there for the corn to take up.
Yeah. So it's all a big cycle, and you know, the farmers know this, and it's just trying to get everybody else kind of educated.
Get them on board.
Right.
Hey, I think it's time to take another break and listen to a few messages from our sponsors.
Pleasant Valley Greenhouse is ready for the growing season. As you anticipate and plan your garden or outdoor space, know that we are working hard now at Pleasant Valley to help make your efforts successful later. We have compost, seeds, flowers, and that great selection of edibles and perennials you expect every year. And of course, our incredible planters and hanging baskets. Come and see us. We're open daily. Call 532-GROW for information. Pleasant Valley Greenhouse. House, 3 miles west of Main Street, Torrington.
Need some help mowing your lawn? Then let Levi's Lawn Care help you out this summer. Levi can mow your yard at very affordable prices. He starts at around $20 per week, and that includes mowing and trimming. Levi can also aerate your lawn and offers tree trimming and stump grinding. Let Levi take care of the mowing duties of your lawn this summer. Give him a call at 575-1626. That's 575-1626.
Smart is finding the right fit when it comes to banking. At Platte Valley Bank, we have checking account options to fit your lifestyle and an online account chooser to make finding the right account easy. Choose a checking account that's smart for you, whether it's going paperless, earning interest, or saving on account fees. Simple or sophisticated, we have banking solutions to help fuel your financial goals. Stop by your neighborhood branch today or visit us at www.pvbank.com. Platte Valley Bank, you belong here.
Platte Valley Bank, member FDIC.
Does it seem like the grass is always greener in your neighbor's yard? Well, that's because your neighbor had Sunrise Sprinkler install an underground sprinkler system. Sunrise Sprinkler in Torrington is the top choice for underground sprinkler systems. Give Chris Miller a call at 575-4300. Sunrise Sprinkler can give you a free estimate on a sprinkler system, and you can find out about the many other services that they offer. Give them a call today at 575-4300. Sunrise Sprinkler in Torrington.
Now is the time to ensure a beautiful and healthy lawn for this summer. Jerden Greenmaster Fertilizer is a premium formula high in iron and nitrogen, ensuring quick green up, good texture, and strong durability. Jerden is a division of Westco and produces top quality fertilizers specifically formulated for the Rocky Mountain region. Visit www.westco.coop to find the Jerden dealer nearest you. Westco, service, solutions, success.
Westco's your best value through and through.
Law
lawn getting that old, worn-out look, having to water and mow too often? Then it's time to call Torrington Sod Farm. They'll be happy to visit with you and show you why sod is the right answer. Call 532-2777. Torrington Sod Farm has been serving the area since 1999 and pride themselves on their service, quality sod, and exceeding customer expectations. They look forward to serving you, so give them a call for a free quote at 532-2777. Torrington Sod Farm. They make it easy being green.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. This is Jeff Edwards and Jerry Urshebeck for the KERM Lawn and Garden Program, along with our guest, Steve Ackright.
Howdy, howdy.
During the break, we had a little side conversation about the possibility of putting out pre-emergent herbicides or any herbicide work right now. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing I want to say right off the bat is if you're going to do a pre-emerge, you can get it on now because your seeds are just starting to germinate.
You can.
Yes.
Well, the forsythia is in. It's not out yet.
So the thing with pre-emergence is that they, like all herbicides, they have a what you would call a window and a half-life of how long they're effective
12
for.
Weeks.
Yeah. So if you put them on now, 12 weeks from now would be when?
Do the math.
Yeah, April, yeah. May, June. They'd start to break the end of June, middle of July.
Right.
About. So you're not getting season-long control with them. And so you would still have some late germination of weeds that are still out there. So we might need to talk a little bit about how pre-emergent herbicides work.
Okay, they basically... There's a couple different kinds. There's the one that you can put on a lawn.
Mm-hmm.
That one.
And flower beds. And
that's a... You've got like three or four different commercial grade brand.
Sure.
But the key thing with any of the pre-emerge, it's a little bit early. I agree with that. But the key thing is if you're going to do any seeding whatsoever, you want to overseed your lawn. You were asking me about that, Jerry. Well, if you put on a pre-emerge to keep the weeds down, you can't put your grass seed down.
So what happens is the pre-emergent products create kind of their own weed barrier, right?
Right.
And when the seed germinates, it prevents the root from growing, and it'll kill that seed.
Correct.
So that's how they work. So... and it's a timing thing, and they work best if you can put them on and then get a half inch to three quarters of an inch of moisture to incorporate them so that it gets into the soil profile so that it continues to keep the weeds from germinating. And a lot of these things are very volatile, so if you just spray them on the surface and you don't get any moisture or you don't incorporate them, your length of control... The duration, the 12-week estimate that you had, is significantly reduced.
Right. And that's why I, with the pre-emerge, I have never cared for the liquid.
Okay.
The granule, you can get it on, work it into the soil a little bit, water it in, and you're going to have a lot better control than a liquid.
Because timing is really critical, right?
Yes.
So if you can get it on... Right before it rains, it's fantastic. But if you put it on and it turns out hot and dry,
it's not going to do you any good.
It'll volatilize off, and you've wasted that application.
Well, and Jeff, you were saying something about it being a little bit early right now. But the key thing is, every season is going to be a little bit different.
Yep.
This year we have an early season going on. And I'm seeing a lot of stuff coming up already.
A lot of new germination.
Of all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Kochia, lamb's quarter, I'm seeing things that are germinating.
Mustard, some of those.
Well, and those germinated way early, right?
Right.
So they probably germinated in March. So if you're seeing those things. And now, pre-emergence don't kill anything that's already germinated.
Established. Right.
But you, if you have a place where you are trying to control everything, things that have germinated and things that you don't, or that have yet to germinate, you can actually do combos of herbicides, like a
glyphosate.
You messed me up yesterday. Like a glyphosate product.
Glyphosate. All right.
And a pre-emergent product. And so then you'll kill the actively growing ones, and you'll also prevent new things from germinating.
Now, can you use a pre-emergent even with vegetables?
You can, but you can only use...
labeled.
Established plants.
Correct.
Specifically
correct.
Labeled... Oh, for it, too. You have to read the label on those products.
Or for consumption.
Yeah, yes. that's where the difference between the pre-emergence is you've got one that you can use, say, in your flower beds. One is listed for vegetable gardens.
Mm-hmm.
But the plants already have to be up and germinated and growing.
Yep. So get them up
or
and growing.
Plants.
Yeah. Right. Or transplanted, right?
Transplanted, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's my kind of thought, is transplanted and then put a pre-emergent on. But you're saying read the label.
You got to read the label.
Make
read
sure
the
it's, label. Yeah, oh, on everything.
And what about protective gear?
Protective gear
is that's very, like
is
tennis
very
shoes,
important.
Open-toed yes. shoes, like...
No, not open-toed shoes.
Flip-flops,
short,
yeah.
Shorts.
Yeah.
Again, you're going to find this information on the label. It's under the PPE section, or personal protective equipment mm-hmm. section. And so it's generally long-sleeve shirt, long pants, socks, and shoes. But the label will probably say shoes and socks. That's an English quirk that they have on those labels. I have no idea why they say it in
put
that order.
Put your shoes and socks on.
Put your socks on first, and then your shoes.
Yes, yes. Funny thing is, it may recommend gloves, but we highly recommend that if you're using pesticides that you wear nitrile gloves.
Right.
Those are available at any place that you can buy pesticides. You may also want to wear safety glasses because you never know where things can splash.
It's going to splash.
The other thing that you want to do is be really familiar with your application equipment. And be able to calibrate your application equipment so that you know that you're putting on the correct rate.
And know what your wind speed is.
Yes.
And where what your neighbors are growing.
Yeah. Drift.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of the, I hate to bring it up, the lawsuits have come from.
Yep.
They came a lot more from down in the southern region, southeast, because in their cotton crops they were using glyphosate and it was drifting, or, yeah.
Dicamba. Most recently, it's dicamba.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of drift issues with that particular product. They went to a transgenic cotton crop that could tolerate dicamba, which is like 2,4-D.
Right. Banville. Yeah.
But not everybody was growing it, and they hadn't released the safened version of dicamba. And so they would just go out and spray a bunch of dicamba out, and then it would drift miles and would take out trees and other crops, and it was a mess.
Well, like Jerry said, you know, along with the wind, you want to look at your temperature also.
Yep.
If you're going to go out there and do any spraying like that, you want to do it early morning when the wind is calm, before it gets hot. If you go out during the heat of the day and you spray... that's just going to vaporize or just volatilize and drift, and you're going to have a lot more problems that way also.
And if you're applying insecticides for any particular reason, take a note on the label on those products about bee issues or native pollinators.
Oh, exactly.
And it will recommend either applying very early in the morning when the pollinators aren't active so it has enough time for that product to dry, or usually right at dusk when the pollinators have gone home, gone to bed,
good
not
time.
Out there anymore.
Yeah.
So it's really important if you're applying insecticides to be aware of other things that are out there.
And that's
there.
Why the mosquito trucks are always driving around at dusk.
Correct. Well,
because the bees should be home.
Right. So all the pollinators should be gone, and that's the time when all the mosquitoes come out. So they're trying to maximize those applications of that product
right.
to control.
Right.
Maximize for the best benefit.
Yep.
Yes. There
yes.
you go.
Yeah.
Use minimal amount for the maximum
maximum
results.
Benefit.
Well,
yes,
if a pound of cure.
Yeah, don't even go
yeah.
there.
Pounds of prevention, pound of cure.
You guys have a phone call.
Holy cow!
Oh man!
Phone call.
All right.
Go ahead.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello there. This is Myrna, and I have a question. This pre-emergent business, I have one patch of my lawn that tends to want to grow crabgrass, and so every year I put on some crabgrass pre-emergent, and I put it on yesterday because it's supposed to rain
today, tomorrow.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Yeah. So, will that work then? Is that, I mean, I don't have to water it like today, do I?
No, you should be okay. So it's going to be cloudy today, right?
Right. Cloudy and yeah, a little cooler. So I think we're...
You'll be okay. Now, the question is it truly crabgrass or is it something else?
Well, Jeff, you would have to ask me some difficult question, wouldn't you?
I would. That's part of my job.
Yeah, I know, and especially when you're talking to me. well, I think so. That's the best information I have, but I've never had somebody come and identify it.
Does it come up in the same spot year after year?
Yes.
So, to me, that doesn't sound like crabgrass. Yeah, that sounds like a perennial. Is it a wide-leafed thing that comes up every year?
I don't know.
Now, come on. So, that's the one of the key things about using these products. You have to definitely be able to identify what the problem is so that you use the right place. And one of the easiest ways to do that, Myrna, this year is take a picture of it on your phone and text it to myself and we'll try to get a good ID.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. Also, you don't want to fertilize at the same time, right?
Fertilizing when you put down a pre-emergent?
Yeah.
On established grass?
Yeah.
You could probably do that.
They do make a mixture that is a pre-emerge and fertilizer. and that's what the crabgrass control is. It's a fertilizer and a crabgrass control.
So, yes, you can do that.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. And can I give you a little tip?
Sure.
When you guys are talking, sometimes two or three of you are talking at the same time, and then it's difficult to understand on the radio.
Okay, thank you. We'll try to do better. Part of it is we start laughing and giggling, and then what we're trying to communicate isn't coming out correctly. But thanks for the information, Myrna.
We're trying to be nice and not tell each other to shut up.
Well, I'm telling you right now.
Okay, we'll try to do better.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
Okay, John's telling me, no, don't touch nothing, just talk.
Right.
So, people are welcome to call the radio station and ask us questions, and we'll try to get them answered.
Between three of us, we should be able to come up with something.
That's why there's three of us, and yes, not just one of us.
So, the pruning, I understand you've done a lot of pruning on your trees and shrubs.
Yeah, our landscape, we have a lot of shrubbery and a lot of trees and things like that. I started in February just because the weather was decent. And I have, from last night, I finished all the shrubs.
Oof.
Trees, I still have some trees left. I've been doing a few of those, but I basically have ruined a pair of pruners this year, used them to death, and I've got three apple trees that I need to get after. It's not too late yet, is it?
Well, the only thing that you're going to have a problem with on your apple trees is any of your pruning. You prune off anything that's going to be flowering, you're going to lose your fruiting for the year.
You know what? I'm willing to deal with that.
Yeah.
And with an apple tree as well, when you do have fruit and it's really thick, like an apple will touch another apple.
You don't want that.
You don't want that at all. So, man, I've learned to pick those apples and discard them because what's that boring worm called? That
codling moth?
Codling moth will sit on one apple and bore into another apple, and both apples get turned.
Right.
Turned so
it'll use one for leverage to get into the other one.
Pushing off.
Yeah. So if you can thin your fruit. But pruning is an important step right now.
Definitely.
Shrubs, trees. The shrub thing, we've talked about this a little bit, Jerry.
You know,
people are really curious about pruning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of personal, I think it's a matter of personal interpretation. Shrubs, for me, I don't like them when they flop. So anything that's outside of my visual, if the branches are laying down or if they're in a walkway or something, they're coming out. And you need to get down to the base of that limb and trim it out at the crown. And don't cut it off 6 inches or whatever, because that just causes problems later on.
There's another problem as well. And if you get poked in the eye by a limb when you're on the rototiller, when you're on the lawnmower or rototilling.
Safety glasses,
they
Jerry.
Need to be gone.
Yeah.
Well, you bet.
Yeah.
Glasses are a must. But if you're getting struck in the head, in the forehead, and you've gotten that 9 times, it's time for that to come out.
It is. Let's talk specifically about lilacs, because there are different thoughts about lilacs. Some people go in and just cut them all off.
Yep.
And that's okay, right? There's a rule of thumb that you should only remove 30% of your plant mass.
Yeah, one-third, yep.
However, it depends on what your ultimate goal is. Now, I've got 6 or 8 lilac bushes in my yard, and they are poor performers at best. They're nice and green, but they don't bloom very frequently. We always get a frost right when they're breaking bud, and then they look horrible. So when lilacs bloom, or shortly thereafter, is the best time to prune them. Blooming shrubs in the spring, after they bloom, it's the best time to prune them. Well, you can't really see what the canopy, what the stems look like when they're blossoming. So, I'll trim all of my, whether it's a bloomer or not, I'll trim everything in the spring just so I can see how that plant is going. My lilacs were heavily infested with scale insects and borers, lilac stem borers.
Oh, okay.
So my goal was to open up the canopy and limit the growth to 4, 5, maybe 8 main stems. And so now I'm eliminating all of the new growth every other year or every year whenever I get in there to prune. So you have all these suckers that come up in lilacs, and I'll go through and I'll clean out every single one of them. Just so I'm opening up the canopy and trying to reduce, and it's working. I have fewer cane borers. My scale insects seem to be being managed, so I'm not worrying about them as much, and now I'm working on developing the canopy. But, it just depends on you. Some folks, isn't it Tom John that likes to save all the new growth and trim out all the old stuff?
No. Well,
oh.
No. He was trimming out all the new growth and keeping the old growth. And I'm just the opposite.
You're the opposite one.
I like to take out those big old stalks. They don't do anything. They just bloom at the very, very, very top. And so I take that canopy down, and I like the new growth.
You just shave everything all off.
I don't.
No. Okay.
But I go in and get after the ones that are probably 2 to 3 inches in diameter and bigger. I hate to have them get bigger than that, because then they're harder to handle.
Yeah, right.
But you can go in and get that old stock, that old stuff out of there, and then you have a refreshed lilac.
Sure. Well, sure. I've seen it done that way, too. We used to have, out on the farm before we moved into town, we had 80-year-old lilac bushes. And there was one year my dad got out there and he cleaned out all the old deadwood.
The dead, yeah.
Deadwood and a lot of those big old stalks. the next year, next 2 years, we had the prettiest blooms on those lilacs. Getting that old stuff out of there.
Yeah. Now, there's another way to do that as well, is if you think that you want to keep some kind of a shade or a visual block from your property, and but your lilacs are 9 feet tall, you can take them down to 6 foot and then again take out all the dead, and then you have a nice 6 foot bush.
Oh, sure.
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 Okay. I'm sitting here. We're both.
But then we put up a garage and we took those lilacs completely out.
So I guess what we're trying to get at is that lilacs are very hardy.
Hardy.
They're very versatile. And again,
they will gather insects in the leaf litter that gathers down below. What a housing market for everything.
Well, and all of those shrubs, the leaves will collect in that crown area and accumulate, make harborage for insects. I always find lady beetles when I'm trimming that have been hiding down in there all winter.
So are you a leaf litter keeper or leaf litter remover?
I'm a leaf litter remover. Leaf litter is really good in general because it does harbor beneficial insects. It also harbors bad ones, too. One of the other things that I spooked out of its winter nest was a nice grandmother hornet that last very long, but they kind of hang out in those places, too.
Yesterday I saw a fly that was at least the size of my thumb.
Oh, come on now, you're exaggerating.
He was just kind of buzzing along.
He was just migrating from Texas, heading up to the mountains.
The B-52 fly.
Well, and kind of back on the pruning part of it, you were saying you like to prune in the spring. A lot of people used to say prune in the fall, after the leaf drop. I never agreed with that because then you're leaving that opened cut, that open wound all through the winter months.
Yeah.
And you end up with more stem dieback and that sort of thing. But in the spring before it leaves out, you can see the structure of the tree, shrub, whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I agree with the spring. Pruning, you might lose some of your blooming.
And leave just a little bit of a shoulder on your prune cut. So you shouldn't prune right up next to the main leader or the tree or whatever, the bush, whatever you're doing. Leave just a little bit of a shoulder for it.
So on a lot of those things, I would refer to that as there's a collar. You can kind of visually...
That's a limb collar.
You can see where that is. You don't want to cut into that because that will interfere with the plant's ability to...
That's what grows over and
heals. So you don't want to leave a lot, but maybe an eighth of an inch out from that collar area. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd probably be about right because then it will grow over. And there again, when you do it in the spring... Just before everything starts coming out of dormancy, starts greening up, the sap is coming back up in there, you'll have a longer period for that branch to heal.
Yeah, I've got a prune cut that I made on a apricot tree. I don't know how long ago it was now, maybe 5 years ago, but it is healed over evenly from both sides, and it has just matched up over the top of that cut. So when you get a cut like that and it looks really nice, like, hey, I did a good thing. I got to tell you, though, probably 80 or 90% of my cuts don't heal like that.
And you can tell that forever.
Yeah.
As long as you have the tree, you can see that forever. Speaking of apricots tree, my neighbor across the road, her apricot is blooming.
Oof.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's so, you talked about, and we've talked about earlier emergent of things, and so even with an apricot, that's the first bloom of the apricot this early that I've seen in the 30 years I've been here.
Must be time for that late freeze. I'm sorry, I didn't say that
early. That early freeze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So There's always that deal. And like my friends were trying to put in a lawn. I'm going, wait a minute. You're coming after this a little too fast, a little too early. And a lot of people, all the old timers go, I keep my hands in my pockets until at least the middle of May. So it may change. Just have to see what the overnight lows are and the temperatures.
Yeah, but Jerry, when you have the intermittent, okay, it's cold today and windy. And then you have
I'm planting today.
And then you have 80 degrees for a couple of days. You want to be outside working or doing something. Yeah.
Get it done while you can.
Yeah.
I almost started the rototiller. God, you know I had the itch. I had the itch.
I believe it. You like had the pull starter in your hand, didn't you?
No, but I was looking at it. Big old Red is sitting there just waiting to go.
Big old lonely Red.
Yeah. But I don't rototill nearly as much as I used to.
Well,
it's just down to like every other week.
It's once early and let some of that, you know, because you fluff up all the seeds. It's once early and then once before you plant. Wow. And then I've not rototilled in the fall. So I don't know what I'd do without my rototiller, though.
You know, I haven't rototilled for, probably 10 years now in our garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your garden is nice. You have a lot of leaf litter, though, in that garden.
Well, and that's
rotting and decaying.
That's what we do is we take all of our leaf litter and compost it and then put a layer of that over the top every spring before we plant and plant right into it. Okay.
Well, I know, Jerry, you were asking one time about putting compost and leaves and that sort of thing. There again, keep it to a minimum. If you get too much, too thick,
you lose nitrogen.
You lose nitrogen because it actually will sit there and just it'll decompose and then evaporate.
It takes nitrogen to decompose that stuff. So, I'm getting the high sign from John. That we're about out of time on our first episode.
Oh, no.
So, Steve, thank you very much for being our guest today. Appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure working with you guys.
Appreciate your knowledge. Jerry, good to see you.
Good to be seen. Thank you so much.
And thank you for our listeners and our sponsors and those of Ann Myrna who called in to harass us. But we'll try to be better. So
Jane Dorn will be our next guest on next Friday.
Excellent. Good to hear. And thank you all. We'll see you next week.